Okay, what I wanted to talk to you about today has to do with Islam, what's going on in the world today, very big news, and especially who will unite the Muslim people. There are about 1.5 billion to 2 billion Muslims in the world. Now, our world was forever changed on September the 11th, 2001, by 19 Muslim men, 15 of them from Saudi Arabia, but all of them Muslims. And we've been asking since then, I say we, the United States has been, the British, the Australians, you know, the main allies that are fighting the war in Iraq right now, and other analysts have been asking, well, why did this happen? Does this mean that all of Islam is at war with the countries that they attack, in particular, at first, the United States, now Britain, Spain, France, the Netherlands, a number of other countries have come under attack? Or is it just a few crazies who are doing the attacking? Now, very recently, a woman joined the suicide bombers. This is a picture of the lady who the Jordanians captured, and they showed off her suicide belt that she was not able to detonate. I don't know if you heard the news this last week. A European woman, a Belgian by birth, blew herself up in Iraq. And it's the first time a non-Arabic woman suicide bomber has joined the terrorist cause. And the analysts are wondering what that all means. Well, we use the Bible as our guide. This is just a little strong. I'm going to bring it. No, I can't bring that down. Maybe the sound people can a little bit. We use the Bible as our guide. And Daniel came down too far. There we go. Daniel chapter 11 is the longest and most detailed prophecy in the Bible. And it starts about the end time in verse 40, even says in the time of the end. And you notice it mentions two leaders here, the king of the south and the king of the north. When the time of the end comes, the king of the south will push at him. Now we have other translations. I want to show you a comparison of them. No, we went too far. Here, we back up. No, we didn't. The king of the south attacks the king of the north, comes at him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and many ships. That's the New King James. The Complete Jewish Bible has a little bit different. It says, we'll push at him. It talks about overrunning the country. Sounds like this is the only mic that's hot, so I'll stay close here. And then the New International Version says, you notice at the end there, that it'll run through the countries like a flood. So you have two international leaders meeting in the area of the Middle East, because the directions north and south have to do with proximity to Jerusalem. So north and south of Jerusalem, and they come together, and as they push at each other, aggravate each other in some way, then the Middle East is run over, in particular the nation of Israel. Normally we have a monitor up here. That's why I find myself turning back, because I'm not able to follow it. Putting Daniel's prophecy together with forecasts from the book of Revelation, we believe the king of the north to be a European confederation that will come together at the end of the age, and that the king of the south then, right now, I say it right now because you have to look at the way the world looks at any given time. In the Bible, you don't find many of the modern nations' names, so you have to look at the way things are at the moment. And at the moment, the group of people that could fulfill the prophecies about the king of the south are the Muslim peoples. We foresee a scenario in which the Muslim peoples will unite, and they will aggravate in some way a confederation of European states, and that the Europeans will respond and overrun the Middle East. That's how we see prophecy shaping up. Now, you probably have some of these pieces of literature, but I'm going to put them up here so if you don't have them, you can request them. You can understand Bible prophecy, Book of Revelation Unveiled, and the Middle East in prophecy. They go through these prophecies in detail, Daniel and Revelation, and put them all together. The Muslims have dreamed for a long, long time to be able to have another empire. Of course, they did up until the time that the Ottoman Empire was overthrown. They would very much like to be able to come together again and have what they had in the past. Listening to the news, you've heard about the Sunnis and the Shiites. I wonder if you know what the difference between the two peoples are. The Sunnis come from people who follow Muhammad. Sunni is an Arabic word that means path or the way, and the general sense is that they're following the way of the Prophet. And you say, well, aren't the Shiites Muslims as well? Don't they follow the Prophet? Well, yes, they do. But Shiite comes from two words in the Arabic, Shiat Ali, A-L-I, and it simply means the party of Ali or Ali. Now, Ali was a cousin of Muhammad and also a son-in-law. He married one of Muhammad's daughters. So it comes down to an argument between the two groups as to who should be the successor of Muhammad. The Sunnis believe that one who was appointed should be the successor, and the Shiites believe that one who is a blood descendant of Muhammad or a blood relative of Muhammad should be the ruler. Now, you know from the news coverage in Iraq that these two groups are against each other. In fact, who knows whether they're going to be able to pull off having a government. I think they'll be able to do that. But right now, they're fighting against each other. It gives you a little bit of an insight into the reality between the two, because there are many divisions within the Sunnis and within the Shiites, and there are other Muslim parties besides these two main parties. It's not a single party. Now, one of the differences between the two is how they look at the iman. Iman is an Arabic word that means leader. To the Sunnis, the leader is the man who's leading prayers at the mosque. He could be just asked that day to lead the prayers, and he is the imam during the prayers, and then when the prayers are over with, he's no longer the imam. They also use the term, this is still the Sunnis, to mean the leader of a congregation, that is, the leader of a mosque, whom they employ, similar to the way that many church organizations employ a pastor to look after a congregation. And you know, they have a different way of using it. It's not a particularly important term to them. However, to the Shiites, the iman is a very important term, and they use that only for those who are in the highest leadership positions. They believe that there were 12 who succeeded Muhammad, and that the 12th one is still alive, believe it or not, even though he lived in the 10th century. Which comes down to the next doctrine that I want to talk to you about. The Shiites believe that that last iman is still alive in an occult sense, in a spiritual sense, that he's just kind of around, but that he will come physically at the end of the age and rally all Muslims and bring them together. Now, here the two groups, the Shiites and the Sunnis, come together because the Sunnis also believe that there will be a Mahdi, which means a divinely guided one, who comes at the end of the age. There are various prophecies in Muhammad's writings about this leader. The Holy Prophet Muhammad prophesied about several events that will occur just before the advent of the Day of Judgment. Among these, he foretold the advent of one of his descendants, Al-Mahdi, the holy or the divine guided one, which will materialize when the believers are severely oppressed in every corner of the world. He'll fight oppressors. He will unite Muslims. He'll bring peace and justice to the world, rule over the Arabs, and lead a prayer at Mecca in which Jesus will be present. They believe that Jesus will come after this divine guided one has appeared on the scene, that Jesus will suggest, or I'm sorry, that the Mahdi will suggest to Jesus, here, you take the lead. And supposedly Jesus says, no, 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 Mahdi, you lead. And then Jesus will follow. They have very specific prophecies about the Mahdi. He will come from the family of the Prophet, meaning from a descendant of Muhammad, through his wife Fatima. Muhammad had several wives. Broad forehead and pointed nose, that could be many Arab men. He'll appear just in one night, just before the Day of Judgment, have the same name as Muhammad. He will escape from Medina to Mecca. People will pay allegiance to him, especially the people of Iraq. He will fight in battles. Oh, that was not working with me, sorry. So I need a monitor. He will fight in battles. He'll rule over the Arabs for 7 years, it says in one of the writings of Muhammad or traditions of Muhammad. And Jesus supposedly comes during those 7 years. He will spread justice and equity on the earth, eradicate tyranny and oppression. He leads a prayer in which Jesus follows, or Isa is the Arab for Jesus. And this is not the same individual as Jesus. They want us to be sure to know. They also have in their theology the concept of a character called Al-Dajjal, or Al-Dajjal, A-L-D-A-J-J-A-L. And he is sort of an antichrist, a false Mahdi. So they believe in a false Mahdi coming, the true Mahdi, and then Jesus coming to be with this Mahdi. And the Mahdi is going to unite all of the Muslims. Both the Sunnis and the Shiites have this anticipation. Now, we shouldn't think that all Muslims are Arabs. Only about 20 to 25% of the Muslims in the world are actually Arab people. The rest of them, three quarters or more, are non-Arabs. In fact, let me put a map up here of the Arab population in the world. The largest Muslim population, the largest Muslim population is in Indonesia, where there are over 200 million Muslims, most of the country, about 88%. Even in India, there are over 130 million Muslims. And yet it's a small minority, the Indian population. About 13% of the Indian population is Muslim. You can see the heart of the Muslim population is North Africa and the Middle East. And that's, again, you know, a reason why we suspect that that's where these prophecies are going to come to be fulfilled. Now, to summarize the current situation, the Muslims had a vast empire. You can't discount that. We are not people who tend to think in terms of history. Americans typically think in terms of the now and the immediate, but the Muslims think in terms of history. Many of the things that Osama bin Laden said in his fatwa that he published in 1998 had to do with the history of the Muslims dating back to the Ottoman Empire centuries ago, and it just went right over the heads of most people because, you know, Western people, not just Americans, do not think in terms of history. You can't discount the empire or their strong desire for unity or the tradition about the iman. And this fits well into the Bible prophecy about the king of the south. And the reality is that they are divided into many sects, many different denominations, many ethnic differences. They come from various nationalities around the world, and many political differences. They have different points of view, as you see from what's going on inside of Iraq. So who would lead them? Who would unite the Muslim peoples? They have to be motivated to come together. All of these people scattered around the world, different governments, different ways of thinking. One of the things that may motivate them to come together is the anger that they feel. There's a strong resentment in the Muslim community against the West for many, many reasons. One of the reasons, plainly, is that the West is now in authority, and the Muslim empire is not now in authority. A lot of the anger centers around the fact that the Americans have supported Israel, and that they are so tight with each other, and the Arabs have never forgiven the British for giving Palestine to both the Arabs and the Jews. And the Arabs moved out, as you know, and thinking that they'd be able to take the land, and they were not able to. You might not be aware of the fact that the United Nations offered Palestine a state the same as the Jewish state back in the 40s, and they rejected it. For the most part, Arab countries and Muslim countries object to what the Americans are doing in Iraq. They begrudgingly admit that Saddam Hussein was a problem, and he was, you know, he had to go, and he was a threat in some ways to even his neighbors, but they regarded it as an Iraqi problem and something that the Arabs should have taken care of. Now they didn't, and so on, we know that, but still, there is this underlying resentment against the Americans there for what the Americans and the American-led coalition have done. It's well known that Syria allows terrorists to come across its border, and Iran either allows terrorists to come across its border into Iraq, or it sends them, trains them, sends them. There's some reports of Iranian intelligence units pouring over the border into Iraq before the American war started in 03. One of the reasons that there is resentment against the West and the Americans in particular is the wealth of the West and the poverty in contrast in much of the Muslim world. It's very difficult to be poor and see the rich man on the hill, you know, driving by in his or her expensive vehicle all the time and just seems to have it good. And we know that there are reasons for that, not the least of which is God's blessing on many of the countries in the West. But still, it's very difficult to be on the poverty side of that. I shouldn't give you the impression that all the Muslims are religious and they're sitting around and waiting for this Mahdi to come together, because they're not. They have to be there. The Mufti of Jerusalem, the highest-ranking Muslim figure in the area, and he said this just before 9/11, just about 3 weeks before, "O Allah, destroy America, its supporters and collaborators." And then he calls for Britain to be destroyed. Terribly chilling, isn't it? Now, this next one is from al-Zawahiri, who is al-Qaeda's number two. He is an Egyptian-trained physician, and you think, what's a physician doing as a terrorist? Actually, he was arrested as a part of a terrorist group as early as about age 15 or 16. So that's how long he's been a part of it. He's a man in his 50s now. He wrote in his autobiography, talking about the West and the Americans, he calls them the enemy that occupies the land of Islam, reference to the Americans being based in Saudi Arabia. "But they spread debauchery and decay under the banner of progress, freedom, nationalism, and liberation." That's a very strong theme amongst the Arab peoples. You notice President George Bush talks about freedom a great deal, and Americans champion freedom. Now, Americans also champion the freedom to indulge in all manner of deeds and acts and entertainment modes that are debauchery, that indeed are sin, according to what God says, but yet the Americans champion their freedom to be able to say that, and the Arabs pick up on that, and they promote this in their propaganda and their literature. Now, about the war in Afghanistan, that's what this next statement has to deal with. He says the most important thing about the war in Afghanistan was it destroyed the illusion that there are superpowers in the world that cannot be destroyed, because they defeated the Russians. Now, he discounts the fact that they defeated the Russians with American help. But he said the next enemy to take out there, as you can see, is America. That's what Zawahiri is intent on doing. Well, so far, this resentment or the anger against the West has not been enough to unite the Muslims. They're not all united against the West. They may not like the West, but they're not united. Certainly the Mahdi hasn't come on the scene, and it's not a single power. You look at what's happened with Zarqawi, the Jordanian, his own tribe, 400-some members of his tribe, wrote him off, said, "You don't belong to our tribe anymore. We reject you utterly." And you know, they've turned their back on him. Even Zawahiri wrote a letter to Zarqawi here this summer, and he said, you know, you should stop attacking the Muslims because you're hurting our reputation. You know, we're hurting our reputation amongst our own people. They realize that they're beginning to stink amongst their own people. I want to propose to you a possibility that there actually could be a backlash against what the terrorists have been doing, and that the backlash might be a motivation for the Muslims to come together. Apart from what we've read in the news, you don't get a lot of coverage about what's going on in the Muslim community. The Muslims do believe that their way of life is superior. They believe that their way of life is fit to rule this world. I say, well, that's shocking. Well, Christians believe that their way of life is fit to rule this world. The Muslims believe the same way. And they unabashedly are going about hoping for that opportunity to do that. But they see, many Muslims see their religion as a bright and a shining opportunity, not an evil or a terrible thing. They don't see it as a religion that crashes down the doors, but rather a religion that comes through the front doors. This is a statement on a major Muslim website. You read through there, you'll see mention of jihad, Western secular materialism, destroying our Islamic culture. Sounds very much like the same kind of propaganda that I've been reading to you that the terrorists say. Very similar. But that's not all that it has to say. We should realize that not everything in the Western culture is bad, they say. There are good things in the Western culture. And the Western people are themselves victims, and we need to help them out. Western technology is good. Western medicine is good. This is the last... I'm getting ahead of myself here. We must know how to fight this battle and use the weapons that Islam gives us. Notice this next line. It's not to be a jihad of the sword or of the guns. That's the way this group feels. Not to be a jihad of the sword or of the guns. So they do not agree with what the terrorists are doing. This is to be a jihad fought only in the battlefield of the mind, with a weapon more powerful than a sword or a gun. And they say not just education, but a finely tuned word, a well-executed word, a well-presented word. Well, this brings us to another question, whether Iraq is a template for what is going to happen in the rest of Islam. Does it show how Islam is going to come together? This shows some of the reality of what's going on over there. It's Iraq, little chick on the nest. And the eagle, of course, is the Americans and the coalition. And you have these two venomous snakes named Syria and Iran that are just holding off there. Syria is Sunni Muslim. Iran is Shia Muslim. Nobody knows yet who's going to rule in Iraq, but they are hanging on there. And it's just not about to come together very smoothly, very quickly. Could there be an event that happens that triggers the coming together of Muslims, such as a dirty bomb being exploded in Tel Aviv, which causes the Israelis to then launch a preemptive strike against the Iranians in retaliation? Or might the Iranians make a preemptive strike against the Israelis? Or maybe the Israelis will go in and try to take out the Iranian nuclear reactors as they did the OSIRIS reactor in Iraq in the 1980s, I believe it was. Any of these things could trigger a larger war and could inspire the Muslims to come together. We don't know what's going to do it, but the way things work in the world, something happens usually to trigger these things. Now, I said, who's going to unite Islam? Let's put a few faces up on the screen here so you can be watching these. This is al-Zarqawi from Jordan. And he was a thug in Jordan as a kid. He was spent a lot of time in jail. And then he grew up to be a master thug and became a terrorist. I think this man is toast myself. That's my personal opinion. I think he's done. I don't think he's going to be able to unite the Muslims, and I think he's just about done with his so-called insurgency. But he's one to watch because he's out there now. This is the Ayatollah Khomeini, not Khomeini. That was the first Ayatollah in Iran. This is Khomeini. He is the supreme leader, meaning the chief religious figure in the country. He doesn't really look like the kind of a guy who could inspire billions to come together, does he? But it's a different culture. You know, he is a powerful leader. See this charming face? Ahmadinejad, President Ahmadinejad of Iran. He's the man who recently gave a speech and said Israel should be wiped off the map. And then when his audience was, not his immediate audience, but the audience outside the room as it appeared in the world press, was shocked, he said, well, I'm just repeating what Ayatollah Khomeini said 25, 27 years ago. Well, yeah, duh, it's still not a good thing to say. He doesn't realize how his rhetoric comes across. You'll find an in-depth analysis on him, how he's doing, how he got in power, and what to expect from him, and some of the intrigue going on in Iran in the next World News and Prophecy. This is another Ayatollah. This is Ayatollah Sistani. You might have heard that name. A very powerful figure in Iraq. He is a Shia Muslim. And remember, the imams, he is an imam, has to be a highly educated individual in Shia Islam or Muslim. And he, what he says goes pretty well for the Shiite community. He has said, regarding this election coming up in Iraq on December the 15th, he said, I'm standing back, sitting on my hands. I'm not going to say anything for or against anybody. What's significant about that is this man. This is Al-Sadr. He's a young man in his 30s. He is not a cleric. Remember, to be an imam or an iman in Shia Muslim, you have to study for a long time and be a well-respected scholar. He just kind of taken to himself the name of a religious leader, and he has quite a following. Now, he had the Mahdi army that he tried to overthrow the Ba'athists with. He tried to fight against the American-led coalition. He's even fought against other Shiite groups with it, and he just never got very far. However, the analysts say that this man can deliver 2 million votes in the upcoming election. To give you an idea of a perspective on that, only 8 million people voted in the last election. They figure maybe up to 10 million people would vote in this election. So if he can deliver 2 million of the 10 million votes, imagine how much of a power broker somebody in this country would be who could deliver one-fifth of the voting blocks. And that makes this man, young man, radical individual, a very powerful man. His grandfather was a respected teacher in Shia Islam, and his father was the leader of the Shiite community, appointed by Saddam Hussein for a while before Saddam Hussein had him killed. That's the way Saddam dealt with things. This is the man whom I quoted earlier, who said that France is a nice place because it doesn't follow America. You haven't heard of him probably, don't recognize his face, but remember what I said about him. He is recognized by millions of Arab speakers because he's on Al Jazeera television all the time, and Al Jawadi and different Arab networks. Very respected cleric. And if it's going to be the educational side that unites Islam, then this might be an individual to reckon with. Of course, you know the Bobbsey twins here. Osama bin Laden and Al-Zawahiri. And, you know, I'll give you my opinion of Osama bin Laden. He doesn't have the look of eagles, expression one teacher I heard many years ago use about leaders. You can tell someone who, you know, has the capacity to lead people, he just has a bolder appearance than others. I know he's taller than the average. He's about 6'5", but he looks kind of goofy to me. I don't mean to be, I mean that he looks spaced out. He doesn't have the kind of appearance that you'd expect from somebody who's going to command troops. But the man on the right, has been in Chechnya. He has been in Egypt. He's been tried and convicted of murder for what he did in Egypt. His group had he had something to do with the assassination of President Sadat. He's been in Afghanistan. He's been in St. Louis, Missouri, raising funds. He's been all over the world and fought all over the world. He's a brilliant man, and he's a man to watch out for. Now, just before I close, I want to let you in on a little intel that I got from the CIA. I found out how these two have been able to elude the Pakistani army and the CIA and the secret military outfit that's after them. They're using the Segways to get away. I'm teasing you a little bit, but I hope that gives you some things to think about and broadens your perspective a little bit on the subject of Iraq and Iran and the Sunnis and the Shiites and who will unite Islam.